SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. Listening to Sirius XM online and at the website as well, stevebick.com. And lots of interesting results yesterday. Saratoga, I don't even have to go looking too far else. It started, you know, minutes after we got off the air. How many times do you see that expression? It's a million ways to lose. Yeah. Wow. Seemingly on her way to victory in the Jonathan Kaiser. Got to start with the jump race. How do you not start with that situation? And the Mean Queen, we talked, of course, to Carrie Breon on Tuesday. And the mare was, you know, the mare was seemingly coasting home. And we've gotten a little bit of clarification about why Tom Garner was using the crop at all with her. And I talked to Woodbury Payne. Woodbury thought that he was trying to make sure that, you know, she steered clear of the wings, the extensions off the, you know, off that last fence that is in the stretch. And she reacted badly to the first. And then Tom Garner seemingly reacted bad to her reaction. And so the next thing you knew, Garner's on the ground, and the mare, you don't call a horse the Mean Queen by accident, right? We talk about those names that, you know, that obviously have a direct corollary to a horse's attitude, behavior, or talent level. Yeah. You know, when you see one that's named our fastest, well, that you got a pretty good indication. And who was, like, Paul Giacopelli had one years ago certifiably crazy, certifiably nuts. I mean, when you see those names, it's, you know, they're not talking of, you know, they're not naming the horse after their spouse. Although I suppose, yeah, no, this was too bad. It felt badly, and one of those agony ecstasy scenarios, right? And in fact, I think Carrie Breon commented to that. You know, wins the grade one. And then seemingly on the way to a nice stake win with the mare. The good news is that, you know, that's another serious young chaser. And being female, you know, there's narrower opportunities on the female side on the jump circuit. But she's serious. The beneficiary, obviously, Silverton Hill and Leslie Young with the Bodes Well. So that started the day off with a hubbub and a bang, right? And then from there, you actually had all three stakes yesterday had, you know, either exciting or notable elements. And when it came to the Stallion Series stake, boy, Dreamer's Disease, who we had mentioned, you know, it seemed like the price option and looked, here again, this is a little different scenario, but looked to be home free, right? and step dancer responding to exhortation from Dylan Davis, and step dancer just came screeching. I mean, they called it a neck, I think. Yeah, the neck on the chart, but you know, you thought, oh, this is going to be close. It went from this is going to be close to holy cow. How did Davis and step dancer, the Barkley tag, Hayward Pressman and company, how did that horse get up and then get up and seemingly, you know, was widening at the wire? Sort of a disappointment. Ocala Dream really didn't contend, and it was all, you know, Dreamer's Disease from the inside. And so that, I know you had some people that were just agonized, and I don't blame you, but it's not like Davy Cohen did anything wrong. Dreamer's Disease ran great. It just got caught, you know, period. And then let's jump to there's a couple of performances in between the Stallion Series race and the feature, but let's jump to the feature, and we're going to talk to Neil Pessin this morning. I don't want to wait until, you know, next Monday. So we'll talk to Neil, because Bob Lothenbach's Bell's the One comes to Saratoga, and Neil, depending on how good his dinner was last night, if the restaurants are up to snuff, we'll find out. Neil Pessin, Esser extraordinaire. Bell's the One. Corey Lannery. Boy, does he know this. Does he know this mare well? Unbelievable. It was interesting with this, because she wasn't languishing per se, but they ran away from her early. And you could see Lannery about midway on the backstretch get a sense that, you know, then we'll ask Neil what his thoughts were. I didn't see Lannery's comments, but you could see that he sensed that he needed to get closer and needed to be within striking distance for her rally. And very, very heady ride on that front. So just a masterful effort and performance, Lannery and Bell's the One, the Majestic Perfection mare, wins the Honorable Miss and adds to her outstanding resume. Race came back only moderately fast, per se, that with a, I think, an 89 buyer, you know, not even, you know, close to her best, but you know, that's just the race was collapsing a little bit, fast early and slow late. But you can't argue with her 9 for 19. 9 for 19. And 1 point, almost 2 million. Just Neil's got her right so often. Doesn't win all the time, but yeah, first graded stake of the win of the year, you know, second in the Madison and in the dead heat with Estío Talentoso, and then off the board in the Derby City, where the pace was dawdling. But she's now a graded stake winner at 3, 4, and 5. Very nice. Bell's the One. We'll talk to Neil in a little bit. I think 10 o'clock for Neil. And I will pause for a second before I talk about some of the other results, including that important, you know, we talked about that important maiden race with ended up being Vindictive. As we said, the Pletcher. The amazing part about that was how Cody's Wish got bet down to crazy 3-5 status. That was nuts. But Vindictive corrals Pipeline, who ran a terrific race. Pipeline for Chad and John Gunther was 13-1. I very crazy the way the betting went in here. And the fact that Cody's Wish was just taking all that money. Now, granted, listen, Cody's Wish kind of blew the break, and maybe if Cody's Wish breaks clean and gets, you know, position, you know, very well could have either at least contended to a greater extent. And Rosario didn't rush him in, but he flattened out. Let you know, kind of trying to, you know, chase and gain the lost ground from the start, and ends up getting beat almost six lengths, but was well clear third. So Cody's Wish will have to wait. Meantime, and Pipeline has to wait for another chance. But the interesting part of this is 96 buyers for Vindictive and Pipeline. So kind of as we hinted, he thought, you know, the good chance that the horse that came out of here was going to end up as a potential Travers participant. So we'll wait and see. We've got two more days of important three-year-old racing with the Curlin tomorrow and the Jim Dandy on Saturday. We'll talk about the Saturday lineup in a minute. And also something kind of fun and exciting. Going to be giving away that John Deere. I've been threatening to give away that the NTRA Advantage program, the John Deere riding mower, an X330. Oh, yeah. I can't help those of you that live in condos, unless maybe the condo commission, I guess you could maybe give it to your condo association for the yard work. You'll figure that out if you win. The Big Five is the contest. We're going to take five stakes from Saturday, so we'll get to that in a second. I do want to slip in. I started a hint, but then I launched into the maiden race. Bell's the one bred by Brett Jones, and with Airdrie's Majestic Perfection. Brett is going to join us tomorrow, first thing. And as mentioned on Tuesday, I did not provide an update because there really hadn't been any further news. But Brett going to visit Mike Riccio in hospital this morning. And he'll join us tomorrow to provide the latest. And as I said on Tuesday, it's a dire situation. A GoFundMe has been established, John Chrisman, and the outpouring, and I mean, obviously the concern, you know, all week for Riccio's condition. I mean, has been everybody, I mean, just industry-wide, anyone who is in the bloodstock trade thinks the world of Soup Riccio. And this is it's a bad situation. So a GoFundMe is up, and within hours, now I think over $60,000 have been raised, and that's a tribute, $63,000. And so many generous contributions, but the circumstance calls for industry support for Nancy and Addison and Wesley, and Brett will provide the latest news tomorrow morning when we start the show. All right, I wanted to slip that in. I just seeing that, you know, Brett had was responsible for Bells of the One. So, very tough. Back to the action, and The rest of the card included a win, and you know, there's certainly nothing wrong with I'll handle the cash, of, you know, as a race mare. The victory in the seventh race was one of those slow moving train wrecks. I 20-1 paid 41.40. And I actually watched over. I watched it over at the Matisse compound, back by the Big Red Spring, and there wasn't anybody that wasn't just, you know, that couldn't see what was happening in slow motion, and that was that any potential speed had been essentially strangled. Luis Saez, who loves to be on the lead, had Sweet Melania that absolutely made perfect sense on the front end, and instead backs off and stalks, lightly probes, I'll handle the cash. And when that 50, what was it, 50... I guess they didn't have splits, but whatever the half mile was, it was north of 50 plus, and he realized this horse is, if nobody is going to engage, this horse is going to wire, and that's exactly what happened, and it wiped out, wiped out my pick five and everything else. I'll handle the cash. Mike Maker, I mean, just so good. With this kind of acquisition, and you know, has just made not a career, because Maker certainly has had all different kinds of horses, but is really good with this. And of course, Ray Handel had this horse for an extended period, and you know, now that was the fourth start under Maker's care, and. Yeah, this is an expensive. This was a $110,000 allowance, but it wiped everybody out. I think. I'm sure plenty of you probably. Who knows? Some people may have hit, you know, a six horse field. Some may have, you know, hit the all button later on. Actually, the nightcap, right? The Maker again, wire to wire, Caribbean Gold, and that performance in a 40 maiden claimer, that performance was really good, because that was an honest enough pace, and plenty of horses had their opportunity. I was looking for Bunker Hill, who I made the DePaula play of the day, and Dylan Davis, had him a little far back, and I thought was starting to make a mild move, but you could see that Caribbean Gold was not packing up the tent. All the logicals came calling, prayer book, etc. But no stopping this Treasure Beach gelding. Brian Costello wins in 11-2. So let's see the pick four. I mean, with that upset, with I'll handle the cash, that set up a situation where, you know, the pick four, pick five were going to pay. Pick four pays 874. That's the best pick four of the meet, as we discussed extensively yesterday. And the pick six paid just under 35,000. Looks like four winners. And the pick five, 74.38. So, no doubt the I'll handle the cash win set up the big balloons in the multis. We'll do it all again today, and we'll talk later with Nick, and we'll do some capping. The card's fun today. Absolutely, have some opportunities. I actually, when it came to the play of the day today, I ended up going to the second race We'll talk about it in a little bit. Call me Harry. The nine was where I landed with Rosario. Stretch out sprinter. There's a lot of sprinters stretching out in that second race to a mile, and that usually prompts pace. So here's a closing sprinter, and in Rosario's hands, I thought Call Me Harry at 10-1. I mean, there's horses that are, you know, more logical, but 10-1 was an attractive price. I mean, certainly Cold Hard Cash, the horse to beat. Very much, I think, the horse to beat for Linda Rice on the rail with Johnny, who's trying to heat up. Johnny's trying to get some wins. All right, let me set the stage here for everything else going on. In addition to Neil Pessin, we'll talk to Mike Campbell. And kind of an odd pair of stories from yesterday and into today that are really on opposite ends of the scale. In one particular scenario, Churchill announcing yesterday adding some of the specifics to those projects that were discussed Derby week. The lead up to Derby 150 and the ongoing renovations and modernization and maximization of Churchill with three distinct projects, one in the grandstand, a complete refresh, and the first turn project, and then now the third project, a complete reimagining of the paddock in time for Derby 150. So, I mean, a huge investment and the constant, the remaking of Churchill has been one of the most amazing things. I first started, my first time there was 99. And, what's gone on, in 22 years was already remarkable. But by the time you get to Derby 150, I imagine that'll be, completely from from nose to tail, a reimagining at Churchill. On the other end is what we'll discuss with Mike Campbell, which is the sadness and difficulties and frustrations associated at Arlington, and it appears that. That Churchill's not even going to ask for placeholder dates for 2022. There had been some hope that might, that might come to pass, and that would at least leave the door open for racing interests that are hoping to I have to say, pry Arlington away. The Roy Arnold bid and interest, and I'll let Mike flesh this out in a minute. Well, he'll join us in just a little bit. But the bid, is legitimate and has the financial backing that would seemingly, be in the realm, of the price that the property is worth, etc. And the question is is Churchill willing to, to let racing interests purchase the property? And Michael addressed that. When we talk to him in just a little bit. But if they don't apply for dates, that situation is, further complicated. say that. Dick Powell is going to join us, and we will. We do have, in fact, we got the Nassau Stakes later, 10:35. Yesterday, the Sussex. And did you see the video I put up? The wonderful video of alcohol-free arriving back by van to her yard, and people lining the streets. Pretty cool. Really, really cool. And today you've got Adaria. And she comes back here in the Nassau for the Phillies, the mile and a quarter standard here on the last day of glorious Goodwood. You also got a couple others, you know, Lady Beaufort, Ballydoyle, Empress Josephine, Joan of Arc as well. And you got a couple of outsiders, Technique, 20-1, and Zayada. A six-pack here. Adaria, though, on display. And the Breeders' Cup heroine. So we've got a little of that. And we'll catch up with Tony. We have Tony Black. And I'm supposed to get, I got to get to Tom Law today. I'm not thinking about it. We'll talk to Tom. Also, Nick, and I've been incredibly remiss with, we got to get Rich Eng. We haven't had a chance to talk to Rick, to Rich in several weeks. And of course, the Vegas situation, continues to be pending. There was quite a bit of feedback. Let me slip that in before we reach Mike Campbell. The response yesterday to Keith Shamblin's visit, and I asked Keith if he thought he needed to come back and add some further details, because the specifics involved in having NHC at the end of the month, at the end of August, in Las Vegas, the people who are suggesting wholesale, reimagining of the contest, it's just the dumbest response to something you could imagine. There's no online option because of legal restrictions having Nevada be the base of the contest. And for those that say, well, it doesn't have to be in Nevada, it does. And in this particular case, and there's commitments that were made, to Bally's, and you can't just just completely create a new something within weeks of the execution of this. And if you listened carefully to Keith yesterday, he did make it clear. I discussed this with Paul Matisse yesterday on track, because Paul's been, a lot of people have reached out to Paul and to Jonathan Kinchin and, people on the committee. As Keith explained, it's essentially a private party. The NTRA has got the room booked. And so when Keith said and explained that you can sit at your table without a mask, but when you move around and certainly go outside the ballroom, then you're subject to the current restrictions. But I don't understand the reaction. Keith said that the vast majority of participants are quite prepared to, to come to Vegas and deal with the situation as it is, when they're there. Just like you would think everybody is reacting and adjusting to whatever the current circumstance is in your environs. It's being made more complicated by some people's reaction to this. I thought Keith laid it out very clearly. So, here, a couple of things that here's a couple of details, because I asked Keith, for what I thought would be, the questions at large. So, for instance, he says Nevada won't allow some sort of interstate online contest to be conducted from there. And there are other states that would prohibit that participation as well. I mean, as somebody who years ago, when I worked for Procter, it ran contests. And in fact, we're going to have this, this little contest for the riding mower. As somebody, you have to work with the legal department to gain clearance, and certain states, and provinces when it comes to Canada, and notably Quebec, limit, have limits on contests. So that part of it is difficult. And for those saying, why can't we innovate? Why can't we have an online? Because that's not what the NHC is. That's not the premise. The premise is everybody's together, everybody's operating under the same conditions, and has to make their plays under that circumstance. I saw a comment, oh, it's going to be very subdued. Okay, it's going to be subdued. wow. very, very odd. So things could change, further in the next several weeks. But they're doing the best they can to get this, executed. Why not just wait until next January and have a double contest? And there is some there. I suppose if maybe there's accommodations to be made for people who just are uncomfortable. That okay, and maybe there's the potential to have a placeholder, a chit that lets you into, the 2022 or 2023, if you're double qualified for 22, that came up. And I saw, Paul said he'd heard some people make that suggestion. If there's people that are uncomfortable about coming, okay. I mean, I get it. So maybe there'll be every consideration to accommodate as many as possible. Not every single person can be accommodated when you're talking 600 people. It's the greater good here is the objective, right? Wrath of Khan. Every lesson in life can be tied to Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. The good of the many versus the few, right? Okay. So go. Just stay away from those dilithium crystals. That's just. I have to move from this. Let's reach for Mike Campbell, and we'll get started on the conversations. And the if you need this, oh, okay, I see what you were asking, Case. Was asking about a number, and I thought it was Mike's. There you go. Yeah. in case you don't, for some reason. Now that was, yeah, that was from yesterday you were asking. All right, anyway, while we wait for Mike Campbell, let me mention, I talked about Saturday and the draw yesterday, the three stakes back-to-back-to-back, 8th, 9th, 10th on Saturday, absolutely going to be terrific. The Vanderbilt, a lot of familiar faces, including the wonderful Whitmore, $4.4 million, 15-time winner, successful at the Spa. He absolutely has a lot going for him coming into this. Firenze Fire, the 6-year-old. Ron Lombardi and Kelly Breen, Mischievous Alex for Cash's King and LC and Safi Joseph, Rad Ortiz coming out of the good try in the Met. Lexingtonian, good old Lexingtonian. And 0-2 at Saratoga without any impact, but seemingly, you know, had a nice little half-mile work that kind of signals readiness, strike power for Asmussen, three technique for Coach Parcells and Maya Englehart. Really good. You got Miles Ahead showing up in here with Rusty Arnold, getting the horse in from Eddie Plisa from Florida. Montauk Traffic, Linda Rice, Special Reserve, Mike Maker, off of two really good efforts in the Maryland Sprint and the Iowa Sprint, and sort of a now, kind of a now sprinter. A terrific Vanderbilt, the Jim Dandy, where you got five that are facing off against Essential Quality, Dr. Jack, Mask Parade, Wayburn, Keep Me in Mind, and Risk Taking, taking the risk against Essential Quality, and then the Bowling Green, a lot of the usual suspects, to say the least. Bill Mott emptying the shed row. Mott sending Channel Maker, Red Knight, and Moon Over Miami for Mrs. Lyons. Really good. Here's Sisterson and Calumet with Channel Cat, the Man of War winner, and Cross Border. Three Diamonds and Maker. Really good. Chad's got a second time North America, that Breakpoint, the Chilean. Rock Emperor as well for Chad. Really nice. And who am I missing? Sham Rocket for Donegal and for Todd. So three terrific stakes Saturday. And looking for, really looking forward to that card. And we'll get to the Bing Crosby and the Monmouth Oaks and everything else between now and, of course, tomorrow. TwinSpires weekend preview. Right now, Mike Campbell standing by, and Chris Block was going to join us as well. Chris has got a horse that is needed emergency attention, so Chris had to beg off, but Mike Campbell certainly can speak for Illinois racing interests and the horseman. Mike, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Mike, this situation continues to be monitored, and the latest development, as it were, the seeming refusal by Arlington to ask for 2022 dates. Explain the ramifications of that and where things stand as of this morning.
Sure. So the whole thoroughbred dates for next year are upset if Churchill does not apply even as a placeholder for dates next year. And I'm not suggesting that they're going to run, because I think they made that very clear. But what I am suggesting is that there's Endeavor Properties, Roy Arnold's group. I've heard, rumor has it, that they are doing very well in the bidding process, that they're live, that they, I know the municipality here is I've talked to them, and they're very high on Roy Arnold's plan to restore racing here and what it'll do for the municipality, because it will be a truly worldwide recognized destination for racing, given all that's going to be constructed here. So the problem is that if Churchill does not apply for dates next year, and there's no vehicle in Illinois law for a successor owner of a racetrack to come in and apply for dates, which means it would have to have all of 22 off. Well, you know, Steve, when horses go other places and when people make other arrangements, and certain people just stop racing. You know, you have to have that continuity in the simulcasting community and OTB community. And when you lose that, you get off the train tracks, if you will. It's very hard to restore. And in fact, it's very harmful. I don't know. You know, it seems like everything they do these days is inclined to hurt racing in Illinois or hurt the people involved in racing. I don't know. I don't get it. They got an earnings report on going on right now, and if people give a damn out there, they should call in and not allow this, not stand for this. There's no reason that they can't at least allow for racing next year at some racetrack, some destination for summer dates.
I have not had the chance to get Roy Arnold in to you know, kind of frame his conversation, and maybe they prefer anyway to work behind the scenes. But I mean, Mike, what have you, you know, what has been the conversation in terms of the, you know, the discussions or the approach? I mean, are they being just simply rebuffed, or you know, is there any dialogue between Arnold's group and CDI?
Oh, I believe there is. You know, I'm not privy to those types of conversations, but I hear a lot when you're president of an association like myself. But yes, I believe they are, and time will work it out. I mean, Churchill is so in control of the process, they can come up with almost anything. But there's no denying one thing, and that is Churchill's commitment to stop any gaming at Arlington Park from competing with Rivers. It's the worst-kept secret in Illinois. And that's the part that is just galling about this, because but for that, we would have gaming here, and this would have restored racing to its very finest day. And instead, we find ourselves in a position where the people that I represent, all these folks out here on this backstretch, all these owners and trainers that participate in racing during the summertime here, they're going to have no place to go next year. And so, you know, yeah, I've got people that are just traumatized by this thing. And, you know, it's just so difficult to get your arms around the idea that there could be no summer racing for thoroughbreds in Illinois next year. And so, you know, the appeal, quite frankly, is, Churchill, come on, give these poor people a shot. You know, let them make a living, for crying out loud. They certainly can't detract from your corporate profits if you simply apply for dates. And so that's the only vehicle to provide continuity and give us a chance for a future here in Illinois. And I got to tell you something. I don't know how fans across America put up with this stuff. It may not be criminal, but I will tell you it is amoral. There's nothing illegal about what they're doing, but it is amoral.
It's frustrating. I mean, particularly knowing that there are resources that, you know, that would like to go on with Arlington as a, you know, as a racing venue.
Endeavor Properties is real. They have a real plan. It's been accepted by everybody, state senators, leadership. Everybody's aware of it. It's there. It'll restore racing. I mean, what is the problem? If they can't make it work here, what is wrong with giving somebody else a try at it? Without gaming, by the way. So, I mean, it's so absurd. You know, this is, like I said, it's something just has to be done. People across this country that love racing, that like to see racing built and prosper, shouldn't stand for this kind of stuff. Surely it flies in the face of corporate responsibility to a community and an industry. What's going to happen here in Illinois is this racing commission is going to be looking after a meet. And that, by that I mean some handful of days, some 60 days or whatever of thoroughbred racing for the whole year, when at one time we were in the top five in the entire country. And not that long ago, and we're still good for $600 million a year. As bad as this Arlington Park meet offered quality of horses, they average $2 million a day in handle. I mean, it's almost too big to fail. It's just because of the size of the market. And now they're going to tear it down. Now they're going to destroy it. For 10 years, they've done a pretty good job doing it anyway. But now things are closing here. We are on a sinking ship, and we need help.
Mike Campbell with us from the Illinois Horseman. And is there, let's worst-case scenario, no dates are applied. What's the potential for Hawthorne to make up the difference and have a summer meet? Is that even a practical solution long term? If in fact there is no future for Arlington,
I doubt it. It requires the Harness Horsemen's Association. They've always had those dates during the summertime. They're going to be. You know, they have reasons and purpose for having those dates. I just don't see that's going to happen. Not to mention the fact that Hawthorne some time ago stopped all work on their casino in December, and they've just gutted their building. Nothing has gone on since that time. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the there's just all these. We passed the gaming bill 2 years ago. There's not been $1 dedicated to purses from that gaming bill. And it's been over 2 years now. Now, when the tracks got their opportunity to utilize sports betting for themselves, they all did that. But not $1 has been contributed from gaming to purses, and it's been 2 years after the fact. And we get no government leadership of any kind that's willing to step up and say, look, we're going to advocate for racing. It's like my lobbyist told me, in this state, people don't get up every morning and start thinking about racing, but... They'll think about it when it's gone. And this municipality here, when these property taxes are redistributed to their residents, they'll understand what $3.5 million in property taxes meant to them as well. So it's just a crime what's going on, Steve. I know you're a race fan like so many of us are, and I know there are. I've seen Churchill bout of pressure before from race fans. And this is my one last appeal, because if by tomorrow, by the stroke of 5 o'clock, we are 1 minute away from doomsday here in Illinois relative to summer racing. You lose a main artery of racing like this that has historic background, and I will tell you that it will harm the entire rest of the industry. If it can happen to us, it'll happen to others too.
Well, and that is a legitimate, that's not a hyperbole, hyperbolic statement. It's one of those scenarios, and granted, there would still, quote unquote, be, racing in Chicagoland, but it's not. It's a different entity. I mean, the problem is, Mike, when you watch places like Bay Meadows and Hollywood Park disappear and Suffolk Downs, and granted that's, three different levels of racing, but, all three, whether an A, B, or C track in major markets, all three hugely historic in their respective in their respective arenas, and I'm sure there was a point. I mean, it predates me, but I'm sure there was a point where nobody could envision Chicago racing without Washington Park.
Well, you're right on all levels except for one thing, Steve. Endeavor Properties, Roy Arnold. I've heard that it's one of the highest bid. I mean, okay. What's the problem? When you go to buy the horse, though, because the guy that's got the most money to buy the horse with gets the horse. I'm not sure in this case it's not fixed and the horse can't be bought. And that's the problem. So, again, you know, where is the transparency? Where is the leadership in this country? We like to pride ourselves on protecting racing in all these states. How about the Integrity and Security, Safety and Securities Act that just passed? We're doing all these things to improve racing. Improving racing, you don't improve racing by taking down major racetracks. And so, you know, this county, we got 5 million people in Cook County, for crying out loud, and we're failing? I mean, how is that even possible?
Yeah, and of course,
somebody that's saying, look, if you can't build a mousetrap the right way, we want to. If Endeavor Properties can do it, they're smart people. They're not putting up, you know, many, many tens of millions of dollars to buy this racetrack to fail. You can be sure of that. They're not doing it because they think it's a bad investment.
No.
So, again, you know, listen, I'm preaching to the choir here, and God, thank God for shows like yours to give guys like me a chance to advocate for my horsemen, but we need some help. We need people to stand up and say that this is just wrong.
When you talked about industry support, and I think back, we're a couple of weeks away from this year's Jockey Club Roundtable. The Jockey Club stated, I think 2 years ago, maybe three now, that they were willing to invest, and they were going to provide financial backing to racetracks to upgrade their signal to high def. Things like that. The Jockey Club, does anybody appeal to the Jockey Club to intercede here or to come to the defense of Illinois racing?
Well, I have spoken. I have spoken to the Jockey Club some time ago now. They were very kind in their interpretation of what was going on. I think that they feel like there's a disconnect when it comes to Churchill Downs, that nobody tells them what to do, and that, you know, that's kind of out of their hands in that respect. They did want to get involved and suggested so, but the strange part about this, Steve, was the money was never the issue. The money to buy the track, I had several gaming companies call me. I mean, the money was always on the table. Now the plan that Roy Arnold made is just the site plan is just so great that it took all of us by surprise. I think it's I showed it to a state senator the other day, and she said three words. She said, "This is it," and that's what it is. But again, when you got a process that is built around, Churchill is working as hard to prevent racing here as I am trying to maintain it, which is sort of extraordinary. I think the shoe should be on the other foot, if at all. But this is like pushing back against a juggernaut. They just roll you. I feel like David against Goliath here, and I think I'm losing. So, again, your show, those people that care about racing, you're all very helpful. You've been helpful. You've been advocates for racing. And I just think that, it's the people's choice this time. You want to do something about it, you can sit down and let a bad thing happen here. Or we might be inside, people get engaged, and I think they can change minds. I've seen it happen before.
Well, I think, Mike, I brought up, I don't know if you had a chance to listen Monday. I was at Colonial, and I equated three regional conversations throughout the aughts, essentially, and into the teens, from basically 2010 really to now. And they were in Virginia, Maryland, and Illinois, and at various points in all of those discussions, most of them about in Illinois with you and or you know, breeding interests, Brian Williamson and Chris Block and others, and in Maryland with all kinds of people that whether from Stronach Group, originally Magna, and you know, others, and then in Virginia with Frank Petromallo and Debbie Easter and so forth. And the place that has been, you know, left behind essentially is Illinois. You know, Maryland, things looked dire, and you know, then a very small lifeline was established, and that's worked better than anyone could have imagined. And in Virginia, things were at a dead standstill. They were over in 2013. There was nothing. And now you've got this healthy long-term prospect. You know, even in Texas, where you know you're dealing with you know, a Byzantine state government. Even there, they came up with a plan that sustained and really reinvigorated both the thoroughbred and quarter interests through the little tax trickle, really a trickle of money, but enough that it's been tremendous for racing interests. And then here's Illinois that literally had, I mean, an annual chance at grabbing the gold ring on the merry-go-round, and it seemed like every time things were at hand, you know, it's like somebody took a baseball bat to the kid that was reaching for the ring. It's bizarre. We started these conversations about the money that was being withheld from the paddle wheels, from the whatever, what
that's
they
right.
call
riverboats, right.
The riverboats. I mean, that's like 2008, 2007.
We've been artificially supporting these purses for a long, long time now. And that's what has to come to an end. We need a sustainable future. And it was there. It was provided to us. The law, where racing fails is where legislature does not accommodate by making laws that enable horse racing to modernize. That's where it fails. We modernized our law. It was Churchill Downs that chose not to take out this license. And when they chose not to take out this gaming license, it tanked the whole damn industry. And that's where we find ourselves today. To add more, you know, to throw us another millstone around our neck, now they come up with they're not going to apply for dates. So it gives no successor owner an opportunity to peacefully transition into a new racing model. They just end it. It's just appalling. Again, just like the racing commissioner told me, it may not be illegal, but it certainly is amoral. And what I'm saying is, you know, these people should get no further licenses here. If they use this law, and they're applying for a gaming license in Waukegan and in the city of Chicago, and for the life of me, I don't see how they disappointed and misled an entire legislature and about five governors saying they wanted gaming until they got gaming. So, I you know, it's just the whole thing and destroying thousands of lives along with it. There's people here that have to sell their homes. They have no future. Outrageous. So, Steve, I don't want to take up your time. I can only do so much. I'm just a small guy up here sitting in the trailer trying to keep people with food on the table. And if anyone out there is sincere about, you know, their passion for racing, I would suggest that they get involved as quickly as possible.
Mike Campbell, everybody. And what is the drop-dead date on this, on the application process?
Tomorrow afternoon at 5 o'clock, when those placeholder, even a placeholder date application would have to be in by 5 o'clock tomorrow. That would allow for possibly a transfer to a new successor owner, dates. But that's what it takes. 5 o'clock. We're a minute to midnight.
Mike Campbell, everybody, and the Illinois horsemen and the Illinois racing community, everybody that, you know, there's been crowds coming out, you know, all meet to Arlington, and you know, I'm sure some are there because they fear for a future without Arlington, but there's obviously the potential for a sustainable future, and so I other than appealing to see the eye to, you know, to give the, you know, to give a chance to this, I there doesn't appear that there's much else to be done.
That you're 1,000% right, Steve. But you know what? We've evil only exists because good people stand by and do nothing. And this is what's taken place on this occasion too. This track will be sorely missed when it's not here anymore. And I just it'll be an out and out. You know, it'll be.
It's a tragedy. It'll
have
be a tragedy.
Long-lasting effects on this racing community.
Mike, I obviously wish, you know, I wish there was an obvious and impactful plan to affect the change. I can only, you know, make people aware and ask that you know, that they speak up, and I
doggone right, these people don't live in glass houses. And if they do, they need not to be. They're normal human beings. They got families, you know. So maybe they should consider what others' needs are, too. Again, if they couldn't make it work here, too bad, you know. Now, move over and let somebody else pick up the ball that wants to do it. So, listen, Steve, thank you very much. I got to go back and train a critter or two, too, before I have to get another job. So, as always, I appreciate so much, you know, the attention you paid to these issues in Chicago. I feel like we're always, you know, I feel bad about always having to come to you with my problems and not happy news. But I will say that you've been a great help. The racing fans have been a great help. We hope to be here. We hope to have Arlington continue in some fashion. And that's all we can do. We're just living on hope right now, pal.
Mike, thank you. And we'll monitor tomorrow and going forward. And whenever you need, even if it is to vent the frustration, whatever, you know, please don't hesitate.
You're the man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Bye.
Mike Campbell, everybody. This is anguishing. I've only personally, probably 12, 14 times probably to Arlington, but it's a palace. It's a, you know, kind of a citadel for Mid-American racing. It has been very, very, very difficult, this situation. Take a break, top of the hour. We'll get conversations in with Dick Powell and Neil Pessin. Maybe we'll get Neil first, and that'll open the door for Dick to be on with us when we listen in to the Nassau Stakes at Goodwood. Lenny Shulman, and, you know, by the way, I haven't, obviously, I'm not at the track this morning. While I was on the air yesterday, Tina did a wholesale purging, cleaning of the garage. I'm the first to acknowledge how fortunate I am because she's amazing. So my only responsibility in this process was to get all the stuff she bagged up, all the garbage. She broke up a couple of old shuffle robes, and I'm not gonna make that joke again. But it was only my responsibility to get it out on the street for this morning for garbage. And there were part of those armoires the Schiffer robes. The had a couple of the, you know, the side pieces had to be broken in half, and so I go to break one of them and promptly put a nail. There was a nail at the bottom that I did not see. Somehow, as I broke the thing in half, I stepped on this nail. Now, this thing has been in the garage for 20 years, and so it this you know promptly turned into a tetanus shot situation, and you know, and Tina admonishing me for you know how hopeless I am around the house. I got a little bit of a mess here, but I think, I don't know. We'll monitor it. I would prefer not to lose a leg and end up like Gus McRae in Lonesome Dove. Been a hell of a party, Woodrow. Back after this, Neil Pessin to celebrate his win yesterday with Bells the One.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888.
Thoroughbred Horse Racing returns to the home state of Secretariat when Colonial Downs in Virginia conducts its summer season with a new afternoon racing schedule and minimum daily purses of $500,000. The season runs from July 19th to September 1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Mark your calendars for Colonial Downs' signature event, the Grade 3 Virginia Derby, on Tuesday, August 31st. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs now running Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday afternoons at 1:45 p.m.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced...
Sirius XM Sports presents... At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.